Hank Owens rode into the sleepy little border town of El Indio slowly, sizing it up as he did so. The north side of the town was the American side. It was made up of whipsawed lumber shacks with unpainted splitting wood turning gray. The south side of town was the Mexican end of town, and it was dominated by sand-colored adobe buildings. There was one rather substantial-looking brick building with a sign over the door that identified it as the Commerce Bank. Owens figured the bank might offer some promise. He'd spend a couple of days in town. Check it out. He rode up to the hitching rail in front of the Border Saloon. He patted his tan duster a few times, sending up puffs of gray-white dust. Then he walked inside. He found a quiet place at the end of the bar.
Give me a beer.
He began formulating a plan for robbing the bank. At the other end of the bar, a dark-haired, dark-eyed man tossed his whiskey down. He ran his fingers over the scar that stretched from his right eye all the way down to his chin. This was Loomis Drago, and he had recognized Owens from the moment Owens walked in. The last paper he had seen on Owens said he was worth $500. Drago was low on cash right now. $500 sounded pretty good.
Would your name be Hank Owens?
Owens didn't look up from his beer.
I asked you a question, mister. Would your name be Hank Owens? I'm asking you real nice, and I expect an answer.
The drinkers at the bar backed away so that there was nothing but clear space between Drago and Owens. Even the bartender left his position behind the bar. Owens looked up from his beer.
You expect an answer, do you?
I do.
Here's your answer. I'm not who you think I am. You got me mixed up with somebody else.
I don't think so. I know who you are. I've seen paper on you. You're a bank robber and a murderer.
If you think you know who I am, why'd you bother to ask?
Because I wanted to be sure.
Well, you can't be sure, can you? Because I'm telling you, I'm not who you think I am.
I'm sure enough that I've been taking you to the local sheriff for the reward.
Mister, that's big talk. Unless you think you can back it up.
Well, I reckon I can back it up.
How do you propose to do that?
I propose to kill you, and then collect the $500 that's offered for your carcass.
Owen set his beer mug down, then stepped away from the bar. He flipped his duster back so that his gun was exposed. He was wearing it low and kicked out, the way a man wears a gun when he knows how to use it.
You got a big mouth, mister. I reckon it's about time you and me got this thing settled.
Drago stepped away from the bar as well. Like Owens, Drago wore his gun low and kicked out.
What might your name be, mister?
My name is Drago. Loomis Drago.
Up until now, Owens had been cool and confident in dealing with this barfly. But when he heard the name Drago, his manner changed sharply. He had heard of Loomis Drago, who some called the Devil's Acolyte because of his tendency to send outlaws to hell. Drago noticed the sudden change in Owens' demeanor, and he smiled a cold, evil smile. That fear had just given him the edge he counted on.
Well, now, unless I miss my guess, I'd say you've heard of me.
Owens no longer had a stomach for conversation. He was fast and he had won many previous shootouts, but he had never come up against anyone like Drago before. He knew his only chance was to make a sudden and unexpected draw. And that's exactly what he did, pulling his pistol in the blink of an eye. But Drago had his own pistol out a split second faster. Owens' eyes grew wide with surprise at how fast Drago had his gun up and firing. still unfired pistols slid away from him. He stretched his arm out toward the gun, but Drago stepped on his hand, then smiled down at him as the life faded from Owen's eyes. Drago reholstered his pistol and turned back to the bartender.
I just earned $500. I reckon I'll spend some of it, setting up drinks for everyone in the bar.
It was about a week after the letter was sent for Loomis Drago to respond. He was now sitting in Sheriff Poindexter's office.
With a reward this high, how come there's no paper out on this man?
Judge Dawes was also in the office.
It's a rather tricky situation. He's a town marshal.
The town marshal and he's a wanted man?
Not in the traditional sense. Let's say that his status is more narrowly constructed than that of the normal fugitive.
Judge, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Is there a $5,000 reward out for him or not?
In a manner of speaking, there is. But the reward has not been made public. Only you are aware of it.
How come you ain't making it public?
Because I thought you might be able to handle it better if nobody else got in your way. You have a, let us say, unique method of bringing in the men you go after.
It ain't all that unique. If a feller is wanted dead or alive, then it's easier to bring him in dead.
Yeah, you might say that's why we think you'd be very good for this job.
Ah, but damn. You want the son of a bitch dead, don't you?
To put it bluntly, yes. But it is worth $5,000, and as a sitting judge, I can guarantee you will not be prosecuted for killing him.
Who is this Falcon McAllister? I've never heard of him.
Well, it's not likely that you would have heard of him. He's pretty much a nobody.
If he's a nobody, why are you willing to pay me $5,000 to kill him?
He's become an impediment to order in Scott County.
All right, you can quit fretting about it. I'll take care of him. Where will I find him?
He's a town marshal. How hard can it be to find a man who's walking around town with a star on his chest?
All right, I'll find him and I'll kill him for you.
Poindexter turned to Deputy Russell.
Al.
Yeah?
Go back him up.
Russell went over to the rifle rack and took out a Winchester.
If I'm going to back him up, I ain't going to be real close while I'm doing it.
Drago's opportunity came that same afternoon. He was in the brown dirt cowboy playing cards with three others when Falcon McAllister came into the saloon. Drago knew who McAllister was because he had seen him out on the street earlier that day. He had been in a crowd of people at that time, and Drago decided to let the opportunity pass, but he was not going to do the same thing again. Drago stood up and walked over to stand at the opposite end of the bar from Falcon.
Whiskey.
The bartender poured a glass and Drago tossed it down in one quick swallow.
Callister!
Something on your mind, mister?
Folks around here telling me that you're a hero. You're a hero because you kill a couple of men. Are you a hero, Mr. McAllister?
Falcon didn't respond.
Well, I've killed a few myself, so I guess that makes me a hero, too.
Falcon remained silent.
Let me introduce myself to you, Mr. McAllister. My name is Loomis Drago.
And what do you want, Drago?
I want you to die, McAllister.
You've just made a mistake, Drago. You've threatened an officer of the law. So now I'm going to ask you to unbuckle your gun belt and come with me.
Suppose I don't unbuckle my gun belt. Suppose I draw on you. What do you do, Mr. McAllister?
I'll kill you.
Mr. City Marshal, do you have any idea who I am?
I believe you just said your name is Drago.
That's right. Loomis Drago. Are you telling me the name Loomis Drago don't mean nothing to you?
I've never heard of you. Now I told you to unbuckle your gun belt.
Drago raised his hand and indicated Falcon.
Folks, I'm about to teach the marshal here a lesson. Too bad you aren't going to be alive long enough to appreciate it, McAllister.
You've just made a big mistake.
Have I? And what mistake would that be?
You've pointed at me without a gun in your hand.
Don't you worry about my gun, Marshal. I can get to it fast enough if I need to.
It's like I said, you don't have a gun in your hand, and I do.
What?
Falcon drew then, his draw so fast that it was a blur. One moment, Drago was taunting, challenging Falcon. And a split second later, the black hole at the business end of the barrel loomed large in Drago's face.
No, wait. I ain't gonna draw.
Falcon put his gun back in his holster.
Marshal, look out!
Looking up toward the second floor landing, Falcon saw Deputy Russell aiming a rifle at him. Russell missed, and Falcon drew before he could fire again. Falcon turned toward Drago, who had taken advantage of the fact that Falcon was distracted. Drago missed. Falcon didn't. Falcon stood there holding his gun while smoke gathered in an acrid cloud just under the ceiling of the saloon. He held the pistol for a moment longer, looking around the saloon to see if there was any further challenge. There was not.
He's dead!
Sharp had run down to Poindexter's office immediately after the shooting.
Oh, Drago killed him, did he?
No! McAllister killed Drago!
How the hell did that happen? I thought Drago was supposed to be fast with a damn gun. Where was Russell? Didn't he back Drago up?
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Sheriff. Russell's dead, too. Falcon killed both of them.
Judge Dawes smiled broadly.
Now we've got him just where we want him.
You want to tell me what you mean, Judge? I sent two people after him. He killed them both.
Killed. That is the operative word. He killed them both. I want you to arrest him. I will try him for murder.
The whole saloon's seen it, Judge. They're going to testify that it was in self-defense.
You just arrest him and bring him to my court. I'll take care of finding him guilty.
A new damn ordinance they passed says I can't arrest nobody in town anymore.
Except for felonies. I will write a warrant charging McAllister with first-degree murder. That is a felony. You have every authority to arrest him.
Poindexter, Sharp, and Peters, armed with shotguns, waited until Falcon went into the Hungry Biscuit for his evening meal. Then all three rushed into the restaurant with their shotguns leveled toward Falcon.
Now, there's no need to be bringing his order to him, Ellie Mae. He'll be taking his supper in the county jail. You're under arrest, McAllister.
May I inquire as to the charge?
Oh, hell yeah, you can inquire. You've been charged with double homicide. You murdered Loomis Drago and Albert Russell. Now, take that gun belt off real slow, put it on the table, stand up, and put your hands behind your back.
Word that Falcon had been arrested spread quickly throughout the town, and when the citizens learned that he was about to be tried for murder, the courtroom was filled to capacity.
Is the accused represented by counsel?
He is, Your Honor. I, James Earl Van Arsdale, am representing him.
Objection, Your Honor.
Objection? What are you objecting, Mr. Gillespie?
James Earl Van Arsdale is the city attorney. Since he represents the city, I think it improper that he represent McAllister.
Your Honor, Falcon McAllister is the city marshal, and the shooting which has precipitated this case was done in the performance of his duty. Therefore, as he is a city official, I not only have the right to represent him, I have the obligation to do so.
Are you drunk, Mr. Van Arsdale?
I beg your pardon?
It's not a hard question, Counselor. I asked if you are drunk.
I am not drunk, Your Honor.
Approach the bench and let me smell your breath.
Your Honor, I protest to the effrontery of that request.
That isn't a request, Counselor. That is an order. Now, you will either come up here on your own, or I will have the sheriff and a deputy bring you here.
Your Honor, I request permission to approach the bench as well.
For what reason?
Well, I am prosecuting this case. I believe that I should know firsthand whether or not my adversary is intoxicated.
That won't be necessary, Mr. Gillespie. I will make the determination.
Very good, Your Honor.
Mr. Van Arsdale, if you will.
Van Arsdale got up from behind the defendant's table and walked up to the bench. Stepping up onto the little platform, he walked around behind the bench.
I don't smell any liquor. You may be seated.
Your Honor, you have not ruled on my objection as to having a city attorney represent the defendant.
Your objection is overruled. Mr. Van Arsdale may act as counsel for the defendant. Bailiff, would you publish the charges, please?
Your Honor, comes now before this court Falcon McAllister, who is charged with murder in the first degree of Loomis Drago and murder in the first degree of Albert Russell.
Would the bailiff please bring the accused before the bench?
The sheriff walked over to the table where Falcon was sitting with Van Arsdale.
Get up, McAllister. Present yourself before the judge.
Falcon shuffled up to stand in front of the judge. Van Arsdale went with him.
Mr. McAllister?
It is Marshal McAllister, Your Honor, and it is necessary to our defense that he be addressed as such.
Very well. Marshal McAllister, you have been charged with murder. How do you plead?
Not guilty, Your Honor.
Your plea is heard. Be seated.
Falcon shuffled back to the table.
Gentlemen of the jury, the case before you today is particularly heinous because it pertains to an officer of the law, a man who has sworn to uphold the law, to protect and defend the citizens who are subject to that law. Marshal Falcon McAllister violated that oath of office when he, with malice and aforethought, gunned down two men. He was wearing the badge of his office even as he was committing the crime of murder, killing in cold blood Loomis Drago and Albert Russell. This wasn't a random killing. Prosecution will prove that he had motive for killing both men. He had his first encounter with one of the deceased when he brutally pistol-whipped Deputy Russell while Russell and his friends were trying to enjoy a theatrical at the Malone Theater. And what, may you ask, was the reason for the pistol whipping? It was as simple as an exercise in power. McAllister had just been appointed to the position of city marshal, and as a way to project his newfound authority, he decreed that there be no guns in the theater except his own. This was despite the fact that Albert Russell was himself a deputy sheriff, an officer of the law, duly authorized to be armed at all times. He didn't just arrest Deputy Russell, he pistol-whipped him. Now, I believe that it was a residual of this bad feeling between them that motivated his recent killing of Albert Russell. The killing of Loomis Drago is easier to understand. Loomis Drago was a man with a reputation for being skilled in the use of firearms, a man who had many times faced armed and desperate men in deadly confrontations. Always, I may add, in the performance of a legal duty, because Loomis Drago was what is known as a regulator, a concerned citizen who on his own helped rid the state of Texas of wanted criminals. Yes, he received a bounty for the men he captured or killed, but no less a personage than Governor Roberts himself has stated that, quote, without the bravery and patriotism of the individual bounty hunters, our law officers would be overwhelmed, unquote. Loomis Drago was one of those valiant few, the civilian who puts his life on the line to bring to justice the most dangerous and hardened criminals in our state. Judge Dawes had issued a warrant against Falcon McAllister dealing with the deaths of deputies Harry Toombs and Lou Hamilton. Drago was attempting to serve that warrant when the altercation took place. McAllister had a double motive for murdering Drago. He killed him to prevent the warrant from being served, and he killed him for another, more sinister reason. You see, gentlemen of the jury, Falcon McAllister enjoys a reputation similar to Drago, in that he has killed many men in deadly disputes. Indeed, he is the hero of many a popular dime novel. But how can he stay a hero if there is another man who can draw his pistol faster and shoot more accurately? A man who has been tested and emerged victorious in many gun battles? There is only one way. and that is to eliminate he who is your rival. And that, gentlemen of the jury, is exactly what Falcon McAllister did. He assured his position in the folklore of gunfighting by murdering the very man who was the biggest threat to his position. Now, I will prove all these contentions during the course of this trial, and you will have no recourse but to find the defendant guilty as charged.
With a smug look of satisfaction, Gillespie returned to take his seat behind the prosecutor's table.
Mr. Van Arsdale, your opening remarks.
Van Arsdale walked toward the jury.
Not too long ago, I stood right here in this same position. Not as defense counsel, but as prosecutor in a case involving Sheriff Poindexter. Sheriff Poindexter had just shot and killed a Texas Ranger.
Objection!
Sustained. Limit your opening remarks to your case, Counselor. The case you cited is not relevant.
Yes, Your Honor. It is interesting to note, is it not? In the prosecutor's opening remarks, we learned that this case doesn't deal just with the noted killer Loomis Drago. There was another who was killed in the same incident. Al Russell. You see, it was not just Loomis Drago who attempted to kill Marshal McAllister, but Deputy Al Russell as well. But Russell wasn't facing Marshal McAllister. Russell was standing on the second floor overlook, armed with a rifle.
Van Arsdale took a bullet from his pocket and held it out, first briefly for the jury, then more leisurely so that the gallery could examine it.
This bullet was taken from the bar, not 2 inches from where Marshal McAllister had been standing. It is a .44-40 caliber bullet, the same caliber bullet as fired by the Winchester Deputy Russell was using when he attempted to kill Marshal McAllister. We will prove that Marshal McAllister was not only acting in his official capacity as an officer of the law, but that the shooting was justified because it was in self-defense.
After Van Arsdale sat down, prosecution called Deputy Sharp as its first witness.
Did you see the shooting, Deputy Sharp?
Yeah, I seen it. I seen it all.
Please tell the court what you saw.
McAllister was standing there at the bar drinking whiskey when he looked up and seen my friend Al Russell standing up there on the upstairs landing. I was just standing there looking down on the rest of the folks that was in the saloon. He liked to do that, you know, just look at people. Al was a good sort who liked people. Well, the next thing you know, McAllister seen him, and I don't know, maybe he was a little mad about the little fracas they had at the theater that time whenever McAllister pistol-whipped Russell for no reason at all. Anyhow, without so much as a fare thee well, McAllister pulled out his pistol and shot poor old Al. Then he turned his gun on Loomis Drago and shot him too.
Did either of those men draw on him?
Not that I seen.
Thank you. No further questions.
Van Arsdale didn't rise from his chair as he asked the question.
Mr. Sharp, I have a list of everyone who was in the saloon at that time of the shooting. Why is it that I don't find your name?
I was standing just outside looking in through the door.
No further questions.
Redirect.
Deputy, why were you there?
I knew that Drago was going to try and bring McAllister in for questioning about the killing of 2 of the sheriff's deputies. So I was there just to make sure everything went all right.
But it didn't go all right, did it?
No, sir, it sure as hell didn't.
Thank you, Deputy Sharp. You may be seated. Your Honor, I don't feel that any further witnesses are necessary. Prosecution rests.
Van Arsdale called half a dozen witnesses, all of whom described the events leading up to the shooting. To a witness, they testified that Russell had fired first and that Drago drew his gun on Falcon as he was responding to the challenge from Russell. In his closing argument, Van Arsdale addressed not the jury, but the gallery. It was his hope that in doing so, he might bring enough pressure on the jury to make the right decision.
You have heard the account of every witness, men and women that you all know, men and women who have absolutely no reason to lie.
And these testimonies, even though they came from different people and from different positions within the saloon, indeed, from different stations in life, have given us testimony that has layered truth upon truth, until you are forced to come down on the only conclusion possible. The unfortunate incident that took place in the brown dirt cowboy was clearly justifiable homicide. And here is the bottom line, gentlemen of the jury. Had Mr. McAllister not been an officer of the law, but merely an ordinary citizen who dropped in for a beer, the shooting would still have been justifiable by reason of self-defense. If you return any verdict other than not guilty, you will be acting contrary to the facts of this case, which have been abundantly established. Your duty is clear. You must find Marshal McAllister not guilty by reason of justifiable homicide.
I will find the next person who makes so much as one sound. Mr. Prosecutor, your closing statement, please.
Your Honor, gentlemen of the jury, there is no need for me to grandstand and play to the crowd, as did Mr. Van Arsdale. These people aren't going to decide this case. You are. And I ask that you not let them decide this case for you. Pay no attention whatever to their outlandish response to Mr. Van Arsdale's pitiful attempt to take from you your rights as a juror. Though I called only one witness, defense called several witnesses. But let us examine the quality of these witnesses, shall we? His lead-off witness, the one on which he bases most of his case, was Miss Hannah Buttram. I dare say most of us didn't even know Miss Buttram's real name. We know her only as Big Tits Hannah, proprietor of a saloon and Soiled Dove. Consider the veracity of the witnesses. A deputy sheriff, duly sworn by oath to uphold the law and tell the truth. And Big Tits Hannah, who is nothing more than a whore. I called only one witness because there is only one truth. And that truth, as Deputy Sheriff Sharp pointed out, is that McAllister, known to have been holding a grudge against Al Russell, killed him with malice and aforethought. McAllister is also known to be a prideful man. It is easy to understand how such a man might be jealous of Loomis Drago. It is not difficult then to imagine that McAllister killed Drago in order to enhance his own resume. There is but one verdict you can find in this case. And that is the verdict of guilty. And for the crime of murder, there is but one sentence. And that is that McAllister be hanged by the neck until he is dead.
Gentlemen of the jury, you may be excused to consider the verdict.
Half an hour later, the jury returned and took their seats in the jury box. Despite Van Arsdale's best efforts, Falcon was found guilty and sentenced to hang by the neck until dead.
Miscarriage of justice. Yesterday, Theodore Dawes directed a packed jury to return a decision in a case that, by comparison, would make the Spanish Inquisition appear to be a paragon of jurisprudence. The jury and the judge, discarding the testimony given by honest men and women, relied instead on the perjury of Deputy Sharp to find Marshal Falcon McAllister guilty. And what was Marshal McAllister guilty of? He was guilty of defending himself when attacked both by Deputy Russell and the infamous murderer Loomis Drago. The counsel for defense, James Earl Van Arsdale, presented his case brilliantly, sufficient to convince everyone present of the justness of his cause. Everyone but the jury, who, if the judge had told them that the sun rose in the west, would have returned a verdict of same. Mr. Van Arsdale entered a plea for a sentencing delay of sufficient time to allow him to file an appeal. The appeal was filed, even though the delay was denied. All we can hope for from the appeal now is the validation of our belief that Marshal McAllister is innocent of all charges, and that the trial was a mockery of justice. But that validation, when it comes, will be too late for Marshal McAllister, who is scheduled to be hanged today at 2:00.
two blocks from the gallows, around which a crowd was already beginning to gather, Deputy Sharp walked back to the cell where the condemned prisoner was spending his last day.
Here's your last meal. Steak, fried taters, mess of greens, and biscuits. If it was up to me, I wouldn't feed you nothing but bread and water. But the sheriff wanted to be nice to you.
That's very good of the sheriff. Did you bring ketchup?
Of course I brought ketchup. You can't very well have fried taters without ketchup. Here.
The prisoner took the food.
And I've noticed that the prisoners that's about to get hung pert now always don't eat their meal, so I wind up eating it for them. And I like ketchup with taters.
Falcon returned to his bunk and sat down. Sharp turned his back on the cell and walked to the front window of the room.
I tell you the truth, I do believe there's more folks that is coming to town to watch your hanging than any hanging we've ever had before. Yes, sir, this is going to be quite a show. What's the matter? You choking on something?
Sharp turned and saw the prisoner lying back on his bunk. His throat was covered with blood, and his arm was draped down off the bunk onto the floor. The knife, its blade smeared with blood, had fallen from his open hand.
Son of a bitch! What the hell did you do that for? You done spoiled everyone's fun!
Sharp leaned down to get a closer look at the blood-smeared throat. All of a sudden, the prisoner's hand came up from the floor, grabbed him by the collar, and jerked his head down so that it slammed hard against the table where the food tray was set. After wiping the ketchup from his neck, the prisoner stepped outside the cell and locked the door. Then, rifling through the sheriff's desk, he found his pistol and holster belt. Putting it on, he left through the back door of the jail. He quickly went over to the livery yard where he found his horse standing in the corral.
Hello, Lightning. Happy to see me.
Soon, Falcon McAllister was riding slowly and quietly down the alley toward the end of the block.
Yes, sir, folks. As long as I'm your sheriff, there ain't no outlaw in this country gonna be safe in this here county, no matter how bad they might be. And this here fellow we're hanging today, Falcon McAllister, probably killed more men than John Wesley Hart.
Time to go, Lightning.
Yeah!
The crowd gathered to watch the hanging saw Deputy Sharp come running towards them, flailing his arms in the air.
He's escaped! McAllister's gone! He broke you out of the jail!
Sheriff, I wouldn't much want to be in your shoes now.
What do you mean? What are you talking about, Smalley?
You've made an enemy of Falcon McAllister. I can't think of any man in America who I would least want as an enemy than Falcon McAllister.
You think McAllister's gonna stay around here? I'd be willing to bet you 5-1 he's headed out to California or some such place right this very minute.
Maybe he is, or maybe he's gonna come back into town to settle up once and for all.
Judge Dawes and Poindexter quickly hurried back to Poindexter's office.
What are we gonna do?
We don't have a problem.
The hell we don't! This son of a bitch has more lives than a damn cat!
Ah, but now he is an escaped convicted murderer. I can put out a reward on him that'll be valid all over the state. He'll have bounty hunters buzzing around him like flies on a cow pie.
What if he comes back here?
Do you suppose you could round up 10 more deputies if we offered to pay them $250 apiece?
Hell, for $250 apiece, I could get 40 men.
I think 10 men will be enough. It's going to cost you $1,250.
Wait a minute. What do you mean it's going to cost me $1,250?
That's your share. I shall be putting in the same amount. Surely that's not too much to pay for your own life. For if he does come back to town, and I think that he will, who do you think he'll be coming after?
He'll be coming after you. And me. All right. I'll come up with my share.
Eb Smalley sat at a small table with Denim, Gunter, and Travers in the Hog Heaven Saloon.
Now we're right back where we started. Only maybe it's worse. All McAllister did was stir up the pot.
I wouldn't give up on him yet.
Well, you don't think he's going to come back here, do you? Well, don't get me wrong. I don't blame him. I mean, now he's a convicted murderer.
Ah, you know damn well that trial was a farce. He's no more a convicted murderer than I am.
Well, still, if he comes back here, it'll be his death warrant. Have you seen all the deputies Poindexter has now? They're all over the place.
I've not only seen the deputies, I also see that every deputy he hired came from Judge Dawes's jury pool.
Yeah, and they've started collecting taxes again. Not only that, they've raised the taxes so that they're higher than they ever were. I don't know how much longer I can hold on here. I'd leave today if I could sell my store.
Well, if the town dries up, there sure won't be a need for a newspaper.
There's always need for a good newspaper.
Everyone looked toward the back of the saloon. They saw Falcon standing just by the back door.
Falcon! Oh, if you aren't a sight for sore eyes... Wait a minute. What are you doing here? Poindexter has hired 10 new deputies, and I hear he'll be paying a bonus to whichever one of them gets you. That's 10 to... No, with Poindexter, Sharp, and Peters, that's 13. 13-1.
13-2.
Les stepped through the back door then, carrying a shotgun.
Even so, 13-2, that's not very good odds.
Maybe not. But it's the only odds we have.
And where do we start?
Suppose we surround them.
Surround them? With two people?
In a manner of speaking. I'll come into town from the east of Front Street. You come in from the west. That way we'll have them from both sides.
Surround them. All right, Marshal. Let's surround them.
I'm not the Marshal anymore, Marshal Carnes. You are. I'm just a deputy.
Scarnes and Evans were two of Sheriff Poindexter's new deputies. Both men had served as jurors many times, but before becoming deputy sheriffs, their work ethic had been spotty at best. Scarnes had tended bar for a while in the Long Trail. Evans had worked as a hostler from the freight company. They were enjoying their new position. The two men walked down the board sidewalk. The street was nearly empty. The townsfolk were afraid of all the new deputies. The deputies had just walked by the bank when about 60 feet in front of them, Falcon McAllister stepped out from behind a building to confront them.
Hello, boys.
Both men went for their guns. Falcon was faster. Leaving the two bodies where they fell, Falcon stepped back off the street into the space between the land office and the shoe store. A ladder was leaning up against the shoe store, and Falcon made use of it, climbing up onto the roof of the store. He walked up to the false front and watched as two more deputies came running down the street with guns drawn. Falcon didn't know either one of them by name, but he remembered them from having served on the jury that convicted him. That was all he needed. Another deputy, drawn by the shooting, saw Falcon on top of the shoe store. He had a rifle and drew a careful bead on Falcon. Les had come up alongside him and was no more than 10 feet away when he pulled the trigger. The sheriff's deputy fell with half his head blown away. Falcon looked down toward Les, and the two men exchanged waves. Falcon held up one hand with five spread fingers, indicating that they had accounted for five of Poindexter's men. Falcon climbed back down the ladder.
I got you now, you son of a bitch!
Peters was standing back in the alley, and like Les, he was carrying a shotgun. Falcon dropped to the ground and rolled away. Falcon returned fire. By now, Word had reached Poindexter and Judge Dawes that McAllister was back in town and making quick order of his deputies.
Counting Peters, he's done killed 6 of them. Well, he only killed 5. Carnes has killed 1.
You'd better do something, Poindexter. He's coming for you.
It ain't just me he's coming for, Judge.
You've got to stop him.
Sharp, get a rifle. Climb up on top of the brown dirt. When he comes up the street this way, you'll have a clear shot at him.
I'd like nothing better than to be the one who kills the son of a bitch.
Now wait until you have a good, clear shot. And don't miss.
I ain't gonna miss.
There were 4 of the new deputies remaining now. They had learned better than to be walking down the middle of the street. 3 of them were now walking on the north side of the street. Falcon appeared in front of the 3. Then, seeing them, he ran into the tinsmith shop. Falcon ran through the tinsmith shop as the deputies opened up through the front windows. He ran out the back door, down the alley for a few buildings, then came back toward the street, getting there seconds after the 3 men had stormed the shop. Falcon returned to the tinsmith shop, then stepped out into the middle of the street, facing the shop. The 3 men came back to the front of the shop, 1 coming up each side and 1 coming out the door. That gave them a spread that made them difficult targets for 1 man, but Falcon didn't care. All 3 went down. Falcon quickly turned to his left and saw Les take down another deputy with his shotgun.
Now shooting, Les!
Thanks, Falcon!
Damn!
Falcon rolled behind a water trough, trying to track where the shot had come from. He saw the shooter atop the brown dirt saloon, but he was pinned down and there was no way for him to get a good shot at it.
Les, I need you to cover me! I'm gonna make a break for it!
No need, Mr. McAllister!
Falcon watched as the last remaining deputy dropped. Then he saw Mr. Cravens come walking up the street, smoking rifle still in his hand.
That was one of the bastards that took my daughter. Now we're even.
They're dead! They're all dead! What are we gonna do now?
There's only one thing left to do. I should have done this the first day he came into town.
Poindexter walked out into the street, then stood in the middle, his arms hanging by his side.
McAllister!
Falcon looked toward him.
You got enough guts to face me man to man?
Les and Mayor Cravens got out of the way, and several of the other town citizens who by the gunfire had been drawn out into the street to see what was going on now scrambled to get out of the way as well. But they didn't leave. They knew this was going to be a gun battle people would be talking about for a long, long time.
Well, hello, Sheriff. I was wondering if we would meet again.
You know, Falcon, you were a foolish man to come here and get involved in this. This isn't your town. You have no stake here. Why the hell did you come here and make a mess of everything?
Oh, hell, I didn't have anything better to do.
Nothing better to do than get yourself killed?
You've got nothing left, Poindexter. Why don't you drop the gun belt and give yourself up? Unlike the trial you and the judge gave me, I expect you'd get a fair trial.
Oh, do you now? The only trial I want now is by the gun. Because after I kill you, the deputy marshal...
He's the marshal now.
All right, damn it, the marshal. After I kill you, the marshal, the mayor, and that interfering newspaper man, things will get back to the way they was around here.
I don't think so.
You don't think things can get back to the way they was?
I don't think you can kill me.
Suddenly, Poindexter drew his pistol. He was fast as anyone Falcon had ever faced. He beat Falcon to the draw and got his shot off. Falcon felt a blow to his left arm, then he fired back. He saw a spray of blood as his bullet hit Poindexter in the middle of his chest. Everyone in town came running out into the street then, many of them going toward Poindexter to make certain he was dead, and the others coming toward Falcon.
The judge! Get the judge!
No!
Judge Dawes had watched the gunfight through the window of the sheriff's office. Panic-stricken at the way the fight turned out, he grabbed a double-barrel shotgun and a satchel, then ran out the back door. He planned to go to the livery stable to get a horse, but there were too many people between him and the livery. When he turned back, he saw others coming toward him, so he turned away from them. He ran out into the street, still holding the shotgun in one hand and the satchel in the other.
Give up, Dawes! Your day is over! We're going to get a real judge in here!
With every escape route denied him, Dawes brandished the shotgun.
Stay away! I'm ordering you to stay away!
You aren't giving orders anymore, Dawes. We've had a special election, and you are no longer the judge.
Stay away, Dunham! I'll shoot anyone who comes near me!
Dawes kept backing away from the slowly advancing crowd until he backed into the steps leading up to the gallows. Still brandishing the shotgun, he climbed up the steps, keeping a wary eye on the crowd.
Put down that shotgun, Dawes!
Someone bring me a horse! A horse! Someone bring me a horse!
Why? You aren't going anywhere.
Les started up the steps after him, holding out his hand.
Give me the shotgun, Judge.
No! Get back! Get back!
Les reached the top step and started toward Dawes.
I'm warning you!
Dawes took several steps back then, backing into the hangman's noose that was dangling from the gibbet. Judge Dawes twisted around, and as he did so, two things happened. The noose dropped around his neck, and reflexively, he pulled the triggers on the shotgun. The shotgun blast hit the lever that operated the drop. The judge turned slowly at the end of the rope. Les came down the steps for a closer look.
Is the son of a bitch dead?
Yeah.
Les reached down to pick up the satchel the judge was carrying. Opening it, he pulled out a canvas bag. The bag was marked Bank of Sorrento, and it was filled with money.
Well, I'll be damned.
And I believe this is the money from the stage holdup.
Falcon sat on a chair in the drugstore. His shirt was off, and there was a bandage around his left arm.
You were lucky. The bullet went all the way through. I've got you sewed up, and the mayor had plenty of iodine.
And you enjoyed using it too, didn't you, Duck Gunter? Well, burn like the blazes.
Better a little burning than for the wound to start festering. Make sure you keep it clean, and when you get back home, have your doctor take the stitches out and dose it up again with iodine or carbolic acid. Either one will do. And keep doing that until it's healed.
Whatever you say, Doc.
Denham, Smalley, and Travers were in the drugstore as well. So was Les Carnes.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes?
Don't you think Marshal Carnes has earned a pay raise? If for no other reason than for getting back the money shipment that the bank lost.
Ooh, a pay raise? Well, I must say he did acquit himself well. But a pay raise.
Look at it this way, Mayor. You do want him to make enough money to take care of your daughter, don't you?
My daughter?
Julie and her mother were also in the drugstore, and Julie walked over to stand close to Les, who put his arm around her.
For heaven's sakes, Daddy, are you the only one in town who didn't know about this?
A pay raise? Well, under the circumstances, I suppose a pay raise is in order.
As Falcon rode out of town the next morning, heading for Fort Worth, where he would take a train back to McAllister, he passed by Nunnally Funeral Home. There were 14 wooden coffins lined up out front. The undertaker waved to him.
Marshal, I wish you'd stay around a while longer. You've been real good for business.
Falcon threw him a wave and rode on. Eagle 17, Carnage of Eagles, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2012, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Christopher Graybill, Bradley Smith, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Christopher Sheeran, Nick DePinto, Eric Mesner, Ken Jackson, Michael John Casey, Thomas Keegan, David Harris, Elizabeth Jernigan, Evan Casey, Drew Copas, Danny Gavigan, Alexander Strain, Joe Brack, Tim Carlin, Johann Detweiler, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, Gregory Gordon, James Konachek, Tim Getman, Ren Casey, Yasmin Twazan, Dan Sontag, and Lily Beacon. Additional Boot Hill Boys and Bells by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Additional music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Carnage of Eagles, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, Preacher, the First Mountain Man, McAllister, and the Family Jensen. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
What kind of sheriff are you anyway?
Where will it stop? Who will stop the crime wave? Is our bank next? Will our citizens lie dead in the streets? Fire him!
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Some got blown. I got a whiff of powder or something.
I'll get Sanders. You stay here and stay armed. Don't know what's in the building or the bushes.
Having the right man wearing the star is important to a business like mine. I sell good times, Sheriff. There's lawmen that just don't like anyone having a good time in their towns, and then well, there's trouble.
Arrest the whole lot! Arrest Ralston! We can't have this! Doubtful's reputation is ruined!
For what?
For public indecency.
I don't know any law like that, Mr. Mayor.
Then invent one! I want them out of my town by morning!
Arrest them for lewd behavior. They were virtually disrobing the girl with their gaze, demeaning her, reducing her to their own animal lust.
Well, that's kind of nice, ma'am. But I'm still sheriff, far as I can figure, and I aim to get my badge back real quick now. And if I do, you'll get your money back. You put me in an opera house with naked women, and I cease to think. I don't even have a pipsqueak of a thought between my ears.
That is how we all are in the presence of the divine. You have eyes for ambrosia.
I hear you want to marry me. So, let's talk.
Name your deal.
I'll marry you for 1 month.
I don't think I could swing that.
What do you think I am? I don't believe in free love.
You're expensive, all right.
Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Available now in graphic audio.
Maybe I should go get myself baptized before they shut me down. Once you've been pushed underwater, wearing all white, they leave you alone.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.